Good morning to all of you. I want to again acknowledge Nick. Thank you so much for stepping in for me last week. Since I've gotten home from Arizona, between sinus infections and viruses and everything else, I've had a couple of tough weeks, or as Allison says, a couple of tough decades with health. And that was short notice, my friend. Thank you so much for taking care of me and giving me an opportunity to heal just a little bit. While I've stood in front of you, I've mentioned many times about how music is such an important part of my life. Perhaps it is in yours also. Maybe to the chagrin of many people that I hang around with often is not when we're in conversation, something you say will prompt me to think of a lyric and suddenly I will be speaking to you in song, and you'll be scratching your head wondering why I'm so strange. But I have quoted from this pulpit many times different worldly songs. And I gave an entire sermon once up here about some of the different words that we sing in some of our songs that are not often used today and perhaps misunderstood. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because the subject that I have this morning had three different songs that went through my mind as the thought was forming in my head. I also like to tell you where I got the inspiration for my presentations before I give them. I don't really like this morning's inspiration at all. And since I don't know where to fit it in to try to build the suspense and everything else, I'm just going to tell you right off the top what that inspiration was. When I was in Tucson this year on vacation, Teresa and I had to go to a different congregation. So the first song that came to my mind, and I'm going to tell you why here in just a moment, of course. The first song that came to my mind was this, was Hold On Loosely. It's a song by 38 Special. I didn't put that in the title because we were running out of lines there, and so I just went with the two of them there. But the Hold On Loosely, in case you've never heard it, is essentially saying, you know, if you love something, don't hold on to it very tightly. If you do, you're going to lose control. So hold on loosely and let it do what it's going to do. If you love something, give it space to breathe, it's talking about. And the reason that that resonated with me was so strongly was that I thought, and I perhaps this is true, was getting ready to let go of something that I truly loved. This is our home down there, in our second home anyway, Arizona. And we'd gone to this same congregation for several years. And I felt like I was losing them. But that wasn't exactly the right song. And honestly, and perhaps it's a little cryptic or off base, but the thought in the title of a song then that came to me was Funeral for a Friend, which I don't know why that song is called Funeral for a Friend. It's by Elton John, and he doesn't say funeral and a friend for it. But it's an interesting song, and certainly I thought it was an intriguing title. And, yeah, it kind of reminded me what was going on here. My friends, I felt like they were dying. But that didn't necessarily fit either. Honestly, what actually was a very accurate song title for this was Hold to God's Unchanging Hand. It's a song that's in our red book, number 346, if you ever want to reference back to it later. I know that, well, I know I've sung it. I don't remember if it was in this congregation or if one of the others that I've been in, but it's a wonderful song. It has great lyrics, and it speaks fact as to what God is like. His hand has not changed. In six of the last seven Januaries, the Treese and I, and that's when we take our vacations typically, we've gone to the Tucson area. And as I mentioned, the first year we were there, we did find a certain church and we really enjoyed it. I've been to Churches of Christ at a minimum that I remember in about 10 different states, Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Missouri, Maryland, West Virginia, Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, and Hawaii. And I found one thing. That many of the Church of Christ's that we go to do everything exactly, pretty much, the way that we do it here, except for one thing. Many of them don't do this differently. Do you have any idea what that might be? They have paid preachers. A lot of them do. And they're very good. I mean, you wouldn't hire a salesman that, you know, couldn't make a good presentation. You'd never be able to make a sale. And you certainly, if you were having a preacher up there, you want to have the person that speaks very well and makes an intriguing presentation. And whether it's right or wrong, I certainly have a lot of experience with that. So we were comfortable there and enjoyed that congregation, though it was slightly different. And the young man that speaks at this congregation, he is exceptional. And what I really liked about him, and I don't know that you would have noticed any change in how I speak to you when I'm up here before, but, or since when I first came back here in 2008. But his lessons are typically very happy, you know, about all the good things that are going on in your life and the great things that God and Jesus can do for you and how wonderful it is to be a Christian, and very uplifting, not a whole lot of fire and brimstone. And, you know, I always thought as a child that if I was ever, well, I didn't think of it at all as a child. When I became a young man and was contemplating speaking up here, I kind of figured that it was going to be fire and brimstone. By golly, I'm going to be pounded on that pulpit and I'm going to scare everybody into following God. I'm glad that I didn't take that path. And certainly he inspired me to be very uplifting, at least most of the time when I'm speaking. Well, when we went down there, you know, we only go down there once a year, so I took the time to check their website to verify some information, particularly their times. And the first thing I notice is that it says worship at 10 a.m. I'm like, well, as far as I know, that's different. That says something I've never seen before. It says contemporary service at noon. Uh-oh. Well, it was late. This was the congregation that we've known forever, so I wasn't going to make any changes on that point. We headed out the door. The first person that I ran into when I came into the building is one of their elders. And, you know, as a side note, this guy has had cancer for 2 years. I was completely surprised to see him. I did not expect to see him again. But the elder was in the entryway greeting us, and the speaker was there. And so I talked to them a little bit about what was going on here. What is this coming up here, this contemporary service? And, you know, he said that they had had quite a bit of discussion about it. I'm sure you did. He said something I thought was very interesting. He said that even some of the hardcore Church of Christ members had left. Hardcore? Oh, I smiled and headed in. There wasn't a whole lot I was going to be able to do in my 10 minutes there before the service. And that morning leading up to the sermon, you know, the service was all the same. You know, we sang the same songs. We had the same Lord's table. We read from the same Bible. And I did note, though, that the sermon title that was coming that day was on the flexibility of God. Well, I can make an argument, perhaps God being flexible. The example that comes to mind is the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. When Abraham tries to save the city, he asks God if he would save that city, if he could find all the way from 50 unrighteous people down to 10 unrighteous people. But is that God being flexible? Did God change his mind? Did he change the rules? I refute my own example there because I believe the situation and all situations was something that was known by God ahead of time what was going to happen there. I think, though, that that story in there is important because it shows how righteous Abraham was and how bold he was that he would step up for his fellow man like that. But regardless, that wasn't where the Tucson speaker went. To go back, that sermon illustrated some of the changes that they were coming to their congregation. And to attempt to attract a larger group of people, they're doing some different formats in that noon service. And I don't honestly remember all of them. I heard enough. You know, they're bringing in either, you know, instrumental or maybe even full band music, a different way of participation. And not all of it was wrong, but a lot of it was. This is the beginning of false teaching. You know, this is a wonderful young man that is the speaker in that congregation. They have wonderful elders there. It's false teaching. The wolf will come in and start somewhere, and it'll be somewhere small. Because if the wolf came in and made a change that was so horrible that you couldn't stomach it, it would never succeed. The proof that it works is that even after hearing all those things, when Teresa and I were driving home that day, I was kind of strongly advocating for, let's just give it a try. I love these people. I want to stay there. And God bless her. She had already made up her mind. She said when we got in the car that go ahead and jump on the internet and find us another congregation. And we did. Look, I get it. I've thought about this to some degree myself. You know, can we add a gymnasium here? Are there additional activities or enticements that we could do to pick up new arrivals? Can we do this, that, or whatever? Honestly, I think maybe we've got something coming here after the afternoon service with this crew meeting. I'm interested in seeing what we're doing. And I think that's something we should talk about. And especially when we have degeneration. Oh, I didn't bring my phone. It goes through life like this. And I'm guilty, by the way. You know, it's addicting. When you go through life like that, you can miss a lot of things that happen around you. We need to do something to get their attention. Again, though, that's another subject. Back to that Tucson sermon. He gave a certain passage that was the basis of his sermon to justify that contemporary service change they were making. And that passage was 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. Here, Paul talks about his freedom and how he uses it. And I'll read that to you, beginning in verse 19. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. All right, if you just read that, don't think about it too much, that might be a good argument that you can be flexible. 19, he made himself a slave to everyone. To the Jews, he became like a Jew. To those under the law, he became like, to those not under the law, became like one not having law. To the weak, he became weak. He did all this to reach as many people as he could with the gospel. Well, he was certainly flexible. Look, I don't want to mislead you at all. He was flexible. But to get the proper context, we need to go back to the beginning of the chapter. That's chapter 9. This chapter, in many versions, is subtitled Paul's Rights as an Apostle. Paul shows the Corinthians his motivation for living the hard life that he's living. There are many things he had rights to that he passed on. The main things that Paul refused were spouse and pay. His compensation, if you will, was the reward of helping people turn to God. He wasn't looking for a monetary compensation. He completely abandoned himself to this purpose of spreading the gospel. Part of this calling was to preach to the Gentiles, and that required him to change elements of his approach when needed. So let's go back and examine those verses just a little bit here more. Verse 19. In the first 18 verses, Paul had explained that he had rights to receive help, but he had also taken the choice to be, that he was free to not accept those rights, is what I'm trying to say. That was his choice. Though he was free, he chose to be a slave to everyone. But now he shows that he had the freedom to do what he felt was right in other situations too. These are his choice. Why? To spread the gospel. Doesn't mean that he compromised the gospel to fit in. That never changed. God's standards were always kept. Paul at times gave up comforts and traditions to make an audience with many different people. That's it. That's all that changed. That was the only flexing. In verses 20 through 22, with the Jews, Paul didn't believe circumcision was essential. He refused to let anyone circumcise Titus. But in another situation, he had Timothy circumcised, and that was so that Timothy could be allowed into the Jewish synagogues. Allowed in for what reason? To spread the gospel. Later, James asked Paul to partake in a religious promise that four men were making. Paul didn't expect the Jews to give up all their religious practices, so he became like a Jew. But he taught that these customs weren't needed for salvation. Without the law, as it says later, to the pagans that didn't have the law, they might misunderstand what he's saying here and think that he is saying he's free to do evil things. The parentheses in that verse become very important. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law. In parentheses, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law. He said he is not free from God's law. The weak. We've talked about this recently in class. Some had issues concerning eating meat offered to idols. Paul would give up his freedom to eat if he had to, if that caused them to sin. He tried to understand and reach many different people. He acted differently with them to help them become Christians. We have other examples. And this one, it's something that I think I actually misunderstood for quite some time, what Paul was saying here. Paul, in the 17th chapter of Acts, he establishes a rapport with the Greeks before telling them about Jesus. And what's going on there, in the beginning of it, he's at Athens, and he is very distressed because it's a city that's all full of idols. And he said he stood amidst their many idols and commented about their devotion to their gods. And I believed that he was using sarcasm here, when in fact, now I think maybe what he's doing is encouraging them by showing them that, yes, they're zealous, they're just a little misled. In 17:22, it says, Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus, I don't know how to pronounce that word, Areopagus, and said, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your object of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription to an unknown god. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. Again, I thought that at first he was mocking them. But now, after studying this some more, I wonder if perhaps what he was doing was saying, look, you're very religious. You're so religious that you're actually covering all bases by having a god that you don't even know who it is that you're worshiping. But I'm going to show you what's right. Doesn't that kind of sound like who Paul was himself? Very zealous, just killing Christians until his life was changed. In the first verses of Acts 22, Paul speaks in Aramaic in front of a highly educated Jewish leader, showing that he himself has a high level of education. And later in that chapter, when he's about to be flogged, he reveals his Roman citizenship to avoid that flogging. He never bragged about himself, but he used information that was pertinent to the situation to give him credibility or to find common ground. He knew how to act in a Hebrew household, but he also could dispense those traditions if he was in a Greek home. He became all things for all people. Does God change? I'm just going to read some verses right from his word to answer that for you. Malachi 3:6. For I, the Lord, do not change. Therefore you, O children of Jacob, are not consumed. James 1:17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Numbers 23:19. God is not man that he should lie, or a son of man that he should change his mind. Has he said, and will he not do it? Or has he spoken, and will he not fulfill it? Isaiah 40:8. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. Psalm 102:25-27. Of old you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will remain. They will all wear out like a garment. You will change them like a robe, and they will pass away. But you are the same. Your years have no end. 2 Timothy 2:13. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. The one many of you have been waiting for. Hebrews 13:8. Jesus Christ is the same today, yesterday, today, and forever. This idea, though, of becoming all things to all people, if done properly, is not such a bad idea, really. There are some possible ways that I could guide you in that. I have three of them here. The first one is to listen. Often, we are too eager to interject our own thoughts into the conversation before we've even heard what the other person has said. If you jump in without letting that other person be heard, what makes you think they're going to listen to you then? When we listen, they know that we care about them. We need to be kind. I know this should be obvious, but it can be forgotten, especially in the heat of the moment. It's especially true now on the internet, with anonymity causing us, not us necessarily, but causing many, to make awful comments. Getting the last word in doesn't mean that you won respect or doesn't mean that you won the argument. It doesn't work that way. James 1, 19 and 20 admonishes us to be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Kindness and respect, those things never go out of style, folks. We need to be sensitive to culture. Western culture is rapidly changing. We don't have to approve of every part of the culture to understand it or to reach those that are in it. But if we listen and see and hear where they are spiritually, and then maybe try to find a commonality with them, we may be able to reach them with a truth that they've never heard. Some of that, I think, is pretty easy. Some of that, maybe not so easy. But our goal in all this is to be as inoffensive as possible. In the matter of the cross, that's not true. The message of the cross offends some, but we can't water it down. 1 Corinthians 1:18 says, "The preaching of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing." And Jesus warned us not to be shocked when the world hates us. It hated him first in John the 15th chapter. If we wish to be all things to all people, we can't do it by giving up God's law. God's law doesn't change. And in all honesty, it wouldn't be fair if it did. You know, in the parable of the workers, at least that's what I'm going to call it, they complain about the fairness, but it's not the work that they're complaining about. It was the length of the work. Some of them had gone all day, some of them just an hour, but they all got the same reward. The work was the same, and it's the same with God's law. It hasn't changed, and it won't change. We instead should humble ourselves, give up our rights, meet people where they are, and do whatever Jesus calls us to do. You know, he died for those people too. We need to love them enough to tell them in ways they can understand. That situation in Tucson, which inspired this presentation this morning, that was very painful for me. You know, I know by name probably 40 people in that congregation now. And I've only been there, 9 to 12 times. But you know what? We found another group, a group of wonderful Christians, a group that held me after speaking to me for about 45 minutes about hiking. Great bunch of people. But as far as what was said up there, I may have a poor memory on this, but I think that one time we had a presentation up here from the pulpit and an elder came up and actually spoke against it. I might be wrong. I might have dreamt that. I think it happened. And if it needed to happen, it should happen. Because it's important what is said up here. It's important to pay attention to what's being said up here. Because the people up here are dressed nice. They look good. They're speaking with wonderful words. And sometimes, and I'm not saying it happens here, but sometime it could happen that the person that's going to be up here is misleading you, whether intentionally or not. So I promise to remain one of those hardcore, if I can, for as long as I'm on this earth. A better way to put that, maybe, would be to say that I want to be steadfast in my beliefs and will do anything that I can to make it so that we're always following the correct pathway here, and I hope that you will all promise to do the same. I'm sure you will. I entitled it Funeral for a Friend in my paper here. But, you know, God's unchanging hand is so much more appropriate because it really wasn't a funeral for a friend. Because as long as you're breathing in this body, you always have the opportunity to be right with God. They didn't necessarily die. And I still, it's, I guess maybe I need encouragement from people here to understand what I need to do, because, you know, I'm 1,500 miles away, but I want to reach out to them and I want to express some of what I'm feeling this morning, because what I feel they're doing is wrong. I love them. They're my brothers. As I said, as long as you're breathing in this body, though, you have an opportunity to be right with God. But, you know, that will pass. A time will come up for all of us at a time that we don't know. If you want assurance that you made the right choice to follow Christ and receive that greatest gift that was ever offered, that time is today. Don't do it, though, because I've asked you to. Do it because Jesus asked you to follow him. Do it because you know it's the right choice. If that is your choice this morning, if there's anything else we can help you with, we have you come forward as we stand and sing.